right. Well, it's time once again, as I promised, to talk about another topic that I got a request to do. As many of you who are history buffs of music trivia will recognize that last piece I played, I thought this would be a good sort of intro for talking about trying to help folks who seem to resist help or don't want help or say they want help, but then they do all these things to make this almost impossible for somebody to help them. This is going to be a fairly short podcast compared to some of my other ones, obviously, because really there's not a whole lot I have to say about this except for some, you know, possible explanations as to why folks might do that and how to get around it if you really give a flip about somebody and want to help them. So I'm going to interweave some of this with some trivia while we're talking about it because, you know, a lot of, as many of you know, who are, you know, old school music buffs, some of this stuff's going to be history, you know, old news to you. But since I'm looking at my demographics and a lot of my listeners are younger than most of my guitars, you know, and no offense when I say that because I actually have a couple of guitars that are older than I am, which is a little frightening, but, you know, what you gonna do, right? But since a lot of you may or may not know the history of some of this stuff and some of the musicians and artists who I play and who I listen to and whose songs sort of have inspired me over the years in one way or another. You know, a lot of these folks have had their own set of issues to deal with, and as many of you know, it is certainly not uncommon for folks who are substance abusers and or substance dependent, i.e. addicts. For those of you who heard and or remember my podcast on addictions, my several podcasts on addictions, actually. But, you know, those are some folks who are very resistant to getting help. And most of the time when you talk about folks who are involved in addictions of one kind or another, whether it's sugar or cigarettes or cocaine or alcohol or porn or sex or, you know, spending money or food or whatever, they're pretty hard to break because, you know, as if most of you remember, they're fulfilling some need or something that's missing in the user's life, and or the user has limited skills to have quote-unquote fun without them, and, you know, or socialize without them, or to escape and avoid his or her depression, anxiety, you know, ADHD, low self-esteem, whatever. And so, as many of you know, musicians are sort of notorious for this kind of thing, and certainly that was in the band of the song that I just played has a very well-known history of this and has gone on to do very humanitarian kinds of activities and setting up concerts and assists for folks, places for addicts to live and stuff. And I have a whole lot of respect for that because this artist has also become clean and sober after years of a variety of substance abuse issues, which he has spoken very, very candidly and openly about, and woohoo to him for that. That takes a boatload of courage to do that kind of thing. And, of course, I'm speaking about Eric Clapton, who was with the band Derek and Dominoes, who are the purveyors of the song I just excerpted from. Many of you may or may not know that Mr. Clapton has a very long and very robust history of music, you know, starting back with people like the Yardbirds. As many of you may or may not know who the Yardbirds are, you probably know songs that the Yardbirds do, you just don't know that you know them. For example, those of you who are Aerosmith people, they copied, that's the clinical term for it in the music business, they covered an old Yardbirds tune, and a lot of people have done this. Train Kept a Rolling. That's actually a Yardbird song originally. So when you guys and gals out there hear the Aerosmith doing Train Kept a Rolling, that's Yardbirds. If any of you who know the James Gang, who were back in the day, of whom the most person who has the biggest reputation out of that trio is probably Joe Walsh. When the James Gang were together, and even when they did their reunion tour a couple of years ago, which I was privileged to see in New York, they did a cover of an old Yardbirds tune called Lost Woman, which several folks have done. And so, you know, a lot of you guys know Yardbirds, but you don't know you know Yardbirds. And three probably of the most famous classic rock icon gods, you know, uber good musician folk, guitar player types, have all come out of the Yardbirds, Clapton being one of them, Jeff Beck, who in my personal opinion is a very underrated guy and has not gotten the accolades he richly deserves, was another one. And the other one, which most of you are going to be familiar with, even if y'all is a bunch of young'uns in the Southern lingo, Jimmy Page. That's right, Yardbirds were like one of his big start bands. So, you know, and I think all of those folks have probably had their bouts with some sort of substance abuse problem at one point or another. But I digress. So Clapton, you know, stems from folks like Yardbirds and folks, you know, like John Mayall's Blues Breakers. And, of course, a lot of you guys are going to go, you know, who the hell is John Mayall? Well, he's the godfather of British blues, that's all. I mean, you know, the guy has done a boatload of stuff. He's definitely getting up there, but he is still playing and performing like woohoo well for him. So I'm like all excited about that. But a lot of very, very famous folks have gone through the John Mayall entourage, including Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac, John McVie of Fleetwood Mac, who else? Mick Taylor, who many of you may remember played with Rolling Stones at one time prior to Ron Wood taking over for him. Mick Taylor came in to replace Brian Jones when he met an untimely death back in the day. Taylor's a really good guitar player, also real good blues player, for those of you who don't know that. And, you know, he's certainly, again, been very public about his struggles, too. But yeah, a whole boatload of people have played with John Mayall. He has really, he's got good taste in musicians, what can I tell you? So, and he's still going strong, and his band sounds awesome. So if any of you folks out there are into blues or blues rock, I highly recommend you check out John Mayall. He is really, really a very mainstay of the blues and blues rock stuff. And, that, of course, that's Clapton's roots. Well, you know, let's go back to some of the blues musicians, some of the old-school blues musicians, whether you're talking about Muddy Waters or Howlin' Wolf or Willie Dixon or Robert Johnson or any of those guys. You know, again, a lot of you folks won't know those people. You know, when you think of blues, you think of Stevie Ray Vaughan, who was what I would call a Texas blues shuffle kind of guy. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, when you're talking about the core stuff where people like Clapton and Page got a lot of their, you know, inspirations, you know, they weren't from Stevie Ray Vaughan, because he's like after those guys, in case you don't know your history chronology here. And it wasn't even from people like Robin Trower, who played with Percol Harum and then went off to do his Jimi Hendrix thing, which he's still doing to this day. And I personally think he is the best Hendrix-esque guitar player guy out there doing that sort of genre. And really, really like Trower's stuff. But again, I digress. You know, all these guys got a lot of inspiration from the old school, you know, African-American blues guys and gals out there. And there's a ton of them. And a lot of you folks will know the songs. You just don't know that the bands that did them didn't write them. You know, Cream covered, which was Clapton's other, you know, hot band, which I was also privy to see doing a reunion tour a few years ago. And what an amazing group those guys are. Just love those guys. They're probably my favorite all-time classic rock power trio. Just love them. They're awesome, awesome, awesome. Every one of those guys is a virtuoso. They're sort of like the old school Rush, if you will, or Rush is the new school Cream with prog rock twist instead of more of a blues rock twist, because Cream was really a blues rock jazz influenced band. But again, I digress. Speaking about drugs, and you know, he's been very open about this as well, both Jack Bruce, the bass player for Cream, and Ginger Baker, the drummer for Cream, have also had their, you know, ins and outs of that. Most of the blues artists have had their ins and outs with alcohol or heroin or some kind of drugs. Many, many, many country artists, you know, people don't necessarily associate addictions with country artists, but a lot of those guys and gals have had, you know, their bouts and troubles with that. So the trouble is, when you're making a boatload of money like those guys do and you have the fame those guys do, you know, despite the fame that a lot of these folks have, some of these folks are very, you know, basically shy kind of guys and gals, and somewhat, I don't know what you call it, you know, they're kind of, they have, you know, stage fright, or they're, you know, whatever, they're questioning themselves. And, you know, there was this whole thing about a lot of musicians doing this. And, you know, the other thing is, if you're making a lot of money with that stuff, you know, money buys you, you know, excuses, so to speak, and ways to get around dealing with your addictive behaviors. So those guys, you know, again, talking back to our topic, you know, helping people who, you know, are hard, difficult to reach, or don't want help, or say they don't want help, you know, talk about a rough crowd of folks to deal with. I mean, any of you people who know Aerosmith's story, and they, again, have been very public about their stuff, have really, you know, gone through many iterations of trying to get those guys clean and sober. And, you know, the same thing has applied to, you know, a lot of the some of the stuff that some of the other bands have gone through. You know, and of course, there's still guys out there and gals out there using and abusing and, you know, no offense when I say this, doing stupid shit that's going to get themselves in trouble sooner or later. You know, it's kind of like I told some of the groups that I'm doing, that I'm running, you know, I never truly met, despite their protestations to the contrary, I never met a really happy druggie or alkie or whatever. I never met a real self-secure substance, super substance abuser. And again, I'm not talking about the guys and gals that go out once or twice, you know, a couple of times, three times a year, or go out once on the weekend and, you know, and have a social drink with folks or whatever. I'm talking about guys and gals who are abusing drugs to the point where it's impacting their lives in some sort of way, and or the lives of others on a pretty regular basis. So these guys and gals are very, very hard to reach, because they'll talk about, oh, I have a good time with drugs, and they'll, you know, talk about how happy they are and all this kind of stuff. I never met a happy drug addict. I never met a happy Uber substance abuser, you know. And if they say they are, no offense when I see this, they're full of shit. Or they're uber unaware, or they're just trying to, you know, BS you to get you away, because what the real issue is, they're scared witless to deal with stuff without the drug, right? That's why they do that shit, right? So people don't do anything, you know, without a reason. People don't come out of the chute being a drug addict. People don't come out of the chute being a pimp or a prostitute or a gangbanger or, you know, anything that, you know, most of us consider to be fairly negative in our lives. Most of us go to these bad habits, if you will, that end up, you know, really mucking up our health and our lives if we don't get a handle on it at some point. You know, we do it to cover something up. We do it to escape something. We're doing it to fill something that's missing on the inside with something from the outside. So part of the reason you get kickback with a lot of these guys and gals that you try to reach, you know, the families and friends and loved ones and bandmates and teammates and, you know, actor folks who, you know, they certainly have their share of that stuff too. You know, there isn't anybody who's immune to that. I mean, that's the bottom line. You get somebody with a boatload of fame, a boatload of money, a boatload of social power, prestige, because you see with politicians and, you know, these sex addict guys and gals and doing stupid shit and spending our public money running around with their, you know, concubines and sexual liaison folks. I mean, you know, that's just, if you're having to go get laid every 5 minutes, and I'm exaggerating. I mean, there's a problem here, right? I'm sorry, but nobody is that flippin' horny, okay? You know, I've played in bands with guys who are like, oh, dude, you know. I'm like, no, I'm sorry, you're not that horny. You're missing something here. This is a substitute, you know, as Mr. Townsend writes, you know, substitute. That's all guy actually took a sample of last time, was doing some samples from last time. I mean, it is. It's a substitute for something else. So reaching these folks is really difficult, and it's really hard. I mean, how do you go up to somebody you're living with or somebody that you're in a band with and risk, you know, pissing them off and screwing your band's formula up? They quit or you fire them. You know, I mean, you know, again, public knowledge, look at Black Sabbath and the stuff that happened with Ozzy back in the day. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, honestly, and, you know, he'll tell you that. He said that many times in public. If it weren't for Sharon, his wife, you know, who the heck knows what the heck would have happened to him? You know, and thankfully all of these guys have gotten clean and sober and doing their thing, but, you know, it's hard to reach these folks, you know, and when they're running from something, they're scared. And people who are scared do stupid stuff to avoid facing the thing that they don't want to face. So when you're trying to reach these people, you know, you get into sometimes into physical fights with them. You certainly get into emotional arguments and sometimes yelling matches. And then everybody goes away hurt. And at some point, it really damages the relationship. You know, and I've seen many relationships screwed up horribly because of a variety of behaviors, whether it was shoplifting or, you know, sexual acting out or whatever. It's really bad. And, you know, folks will often come to me saying, you know, my kid doesn't want to get help, or my husband refuses to get help, or my wife or my girlfriend or whatever, you know, and there's ways to approach these folks. You know, when folks come in to see me for consultation or counseling or whatever, I mean, I'm pretty blunt with them. Now, having said that, you know, I don't come out and say, well, that's because you're a GDF and addict. You know, I don't just go boom, you know, bitch smack them, so to speak. You know, but I'm really upfront about what happens. And a lot of folks will hear me say, you know, and folks who's worked with me in one manner or another probably have heard me say till the cows come home, look, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be an asshole. I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm not trying to cause you to feel insulted or hurt. I'm not trying to be mean or whatever. But, you know, this kind of behavior is really screwing you up. And, of course, they fight back and they, you know, they go, well, what do you mean? And I'm perfectly happy. And, oh, well, drugs aren't helping me. You know, the latest one I heard from one of my teenagers in the groups, oh, drugs have made me smarter. Oh, yeah, right, dude. Uh-huh. Yeah, right. And I don't have long hair, and I'm really a 16-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed chick with big hooters, okay? And if you really believe that shit, I've got a bridge in the Sahara Desert. I'll sell you real flipping cheap, right? I mean, give me a break, you know? Jeez, my nanny. You know, made you smarter? Okay, well, if you took cocaine, I'm sure it made you more alert, and it made you feel like maybe you're smarter, but taking for using drugs as long as this kid's been doing, and as long as most of the people I've been doing, whether it's pot, cocaine, alcohol, whatever, that shit doesn't make you smarter. It kills brain cells. It eventually will dummy you. Okay. Now, some of us in the population just happen to be folks with more brain cells to lose than others. You have higher IQ points. You got more compensation skills. You know, and my hat's off to those folks. You know, but I would probably not be one of those people, and I'm not risking it because addictions run on both sides of my family. And I'm like, oh, no, I gave it the office. Thanks, I'm done. This is why I've never used drugs, why I've never been drunk. Yes, I've never been drunk, ever, never. I've never smoked pot. I've never tried any of that shit. And I'm allergic to cigarettes. So you can imagine me playing in clubs and stuff that have cigarette smoke going, oh, my flipping God, is that a pain in the patootie? But, you know, I digress. You know, so if you're approaching these people, you have to approach them with a lot of honesty, but you have to do it in a very smart manner. You know, I tell everybody there's certain components to this. Timing is very important. You don't hit them with this stuff when you're in the middle of a big argument. You don't approach them when you're tired, or if they're tired or sleepy. You don't approach them when they're pissed off or had a really bad day at work, or if you're pissed off and had a bad day, or if you guys are stressed out and running to go to a, you know, the masked ball, or going to a concert, or going to a business meet. You know, you sit down and talk with somebody about it at a time that's more opportune. And if you have to make an appointment with them, I tell husbands and wives and living together partners to do this all the time. If you guys have a crazy schedule, you're both professionals or whatever, or you have divergent schedules, one of you is working a night shift and one of you is working the day shift, figure out when you're off, make an appointment like you would a business meeting, and sit down and talk about it. Make an appointment to talk about it. Put it in your calendar. Put it in your PDA. Put it in your iPhone, whatever it is you have. Right, and make an appointment. Don't procrastinate. Get it done. That's the other thing I tell people is the earlier you can intervene, the better off you're going to be. So if you've got a problem, the sooner you approach somebody about it, the better. You know, it's like cancer. That shit gets worse with time. It's not like wine. It doesn't get better with time. Okay, so the sooner you can nip this crap in the bud, the quicker and the better chances you're going to have of getting it, because the damages are going to be done. Their brains are going to be a little bit more alert. But again, you have to time it right. The other thing is delivery. Now, not a lot of you have heard, you know, me just say, well, geez, this guy says he's just real blunt with people. Yeah, I'm blunt, but I'm tactful most of the time, he quickly adds. You know, I'm human, I mess up too. But in general, I'm pretty straightforward with the folks. But I let them know that what my straightforwardness is not about putting them down. You know, we live in a society where if you tell the truth, you know, kind of like the title of the song I just played a little while ago, parts of, you know, people think you're being a jerk. They're like, oh, you're being rude, you know. And you know, you guys living in all parts of the country, even the South, you know, I've heard, you know, about the South tiptoeing around stuff. Let me tell you what, they do that stuff everywhere. Some places they just smile and lie to you at your face, and they call it a white lie. How do you like this dress? Oh, you look fabulous in that dress. Not, you know, no, you know, this is not, you know, a pattern that just is inherent of the South. Everybody on the planet doesn't like facing shit they don't like to face and have the talks with people. You know, it's like parents having the sex talk with kids back in the day, right? So the earlier you can address the problem, the better. But address it directly. Do it at a time when both of you guys aren't rushed, stoned, sleepy, tired, pissed off, having an argument about something else, whatever, right? And sit down and do it with concern. Let the person know that you're doing this not to slam them. Not, you know, and I use a lot of disqualifiers, as you guys heard me say earlier. You know, please don't mishear me. I'm not trying to slam you. I'm not trying to put you down. I'm not trying to encourage you to feel hurt or angry. But here's the problem, you know, from my perspective. And I say it so that these guys and gals know I'm doing it out of concern and love. I'm not doing it to be a jerk. I'm not doing it to be a smartass. I'm not doing it to be holier than thou. Well, I don't do drugs, and what's your problem? You know, because as far as I'm concerned, drugs are just a bad habit. And I'm not minimizing it, because they're a really bad habit once you become addicted to them, and they become really difficult to stop using, particularly sugar and cigarettes, which are two of probably the most heinous drugs on the planet. And, you know, sugar you can have by anybody, and cigarettes you can have if you're over, I think, 18 in some states and 21, I think, in other states. It may be 21 everywhere, but since I don't smoke, I don't keep up with that crap. At any rate, you know, this stuff is just not good. And you sit down and you talk to somebody about it. You know, you do it with love. You do it with concern. You do it with care. You do a lot of concerned eye contact with those folks. And I tell people, have the eye contact, but don't stare. Look away a couple of times. Be very careful about doing, you know, some people are touchy-feely people and some people are not. So if you've got a guy, gal that you're approaching and they tend to be more touchy-feely, you know, you can put your hand on their shoulder. You can touch their hand lightly. You know, make sure they recognize this is not an aggressive or sexual overtone touch, right? So most of you guys and gals out there know the difference in so-called good touch and bad touch. If you've got somebody who doesn't like to be touched, you know, give them their space. Some, you know, everybody has different personal space that they like. So if you've got somebody that you know is kind of standoffish and kind of doesn't like people in their space, then, you know, respect that. Give them a little distance, right? Talk about how you perceive the behavior is hurting them. Talk about how you perceive that if they don't stop, the behavior is going to get worse, the detrimental effects in their life is going to get worse. And you can talk about how it's impacting their relationships. And if you're in a relationship with them, for gosh sakes, talk about how it impacts you, right? But remember, you know, to quote a line in one of my favorite comedy movies, it's all about you, isn't it, right? But this isn't about you. It is about the person you're trying to help, okay? Now, obviously, if you're in a relationship that's important, their use or, you know, or whatever, their negative behaviors, whatever it is impacting you. So you need to talk about how you feel about it. You need to talk about how it impacts you. You need to talk about how it impacts other people. But don't speak for anybody else. You know, you can talk about, well, I've seen the looks that people give you at parties, or, oh, you know, I've seen how your dad or your brother or whatever, you know, or my feeling is that, you know, other people are concerned about this too. You know, and then sometimes people will come back and they'll go, well, you know, who's been talking about this stuff? And sometimes they're real mad about it. Sometimes they're all, well, how do you know? And they're all defensive and standoffish. Sometimes they're all hurt and, you know, whatever. You know, don't bring up names and don't bring up issues for other people. You know, I always tell everybody, don't play mailman or mailwoman, okay? The post office is closed, okay, even if it's not a holiday. So if somebody doesn't have the integrity and the honesty and the honor to approach somebody else, then shame on them, and you don't bring the message to them for them. Don't do their work for them. You are not doing them a favor. You're enabling their wussy behavior, their escape avoidant behavior, their whatever behavior. Don't do it. But talk about how it's impacting you. You know, you may have to repeat the message 200,000 or 300,000 times before the person hears you, right? I say a lot of things in counseling with folks that people don't want to hear. And you can tell. I mean, they have what I call the look, you know. And I realize I'm doing a little mind reading, but it's been my impression, and it's been pretty much validated later on by some folks at least, that, you know, I get the look of, oh, you're full of fecal material, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, or, oh, you're just a shrink, all the shrinks, or you're just a drug counselor, all the drug counselors are supposed to say that, or whatever, or, you know, you haven't tried it, how do you know? You know, and my response to that is, well, I haven't poured water all over my body, right, and stuck my sexual organ into an electric socket, but I know enough about physics and electricity and conductance of what will happen to me if I do that, okay? And it ain't going to be fun, and it's going to, and even if it gives me a woohoo thrill for a minute, it's going to potentially cause damage, right? It could be bad, okay? So I don't be doing that stuff, and I advise other people not to be doing that kind of thing. So I don't have to take drugs and do drugs to know what the hell drugs do. Right, I've worked with enough people to know. I have it running both sides of my family. I've seen people drunk and stoned. You know, I've been a practicing musician, both live and in the studio, and I still am. And I see the devastation effects. I've had friends who haven't made it, who haven't lived through it. I've had enemies who haven't lived through it. You know, some people I knew, whatever, went to school with, they got killed driving, you know, driving and drinking. Or driving and smoking weed. That's another one. Oh, there's no data that says weed won't kill you. Yeah, people die from driving under the influence of weed and get into wrecks. You're right. So, you know, please, you know. Oh, weed's organic. Well, you know what? So is cow manure, which, by the way, I was running a group recently, and the kids in the group who were doing mushrooms didn't know that the mushrooms grew on cow manure. And then, of course, I get, well, we washed it off. Okay, moron. Where's that thing growing? Where's it gets its nutrients? Okay, so it's already in the mushroom. It's too late. If you're eating that stuff or if you're drinking that stuff, you are literally full of shit. Okay, yeah, I know. I know my drug jokes never get any better. Just, you know, hang in there, okay, guys? But literally, all right? And that's organic, too. I don't want to be eating cow manure, right? Vomit is organic. I don't want to be eating and drinking vomit, right? And probably most of you guys and gals out there with a brain are going, ew, you know. Yeah, you're right. So don't give me this organic crap. Sugar's organic, but it's also horrible for you, right? So, you know, I rest my case here. If they say, well, you know, I can't have fun without drugs, or drugs just make me fun. You can't have fun without drugs? And a lot of these guys and girls will say, well, yeah, but it's more fun with drugs. No, you don't know how to trigger your internal drug machine in your brains, your beta endorphins, your beta enkephalons, the natural opium-like substances in your brain that are called forth when, like, runners get the so-called runner's high, right? What happens is your body gets stressed out, it starts to get in pain, and then the body starts producing these things called endogenous opioid peptides, which is a fancy name for internal opium-like drugs. Okay, and that's the so-called beta enkephalons, beta endorphins, right? The pain relievers. And if you think about it, what was opium originally used for, right? It's in morphine. It's also used in that thing in the old West, laudanum, right? So it's painkiller, right? It numbs you like lidocaine. Okay, had to do that too. Sorry. Irresistible impulse, Your Honor. I couldn't help myself. What your body does is it says, okay, I'm in pain. I'm going to numb myself out. It produces these beta endorphins, beta enkephalons. But a secondary side effect is it kind of spaces you out. It leads you into this hypnotic, trance-like, dissociative state. Your mind and body have dissociated. They're walking on two different directions, okay? So it makes you kind of high and spaced out. So you're not aware of how much pain you're in, and it makes you kind of high, kind of energized. And you're like, oh, yeah, I can run another 30 miles. Okay, well, there is a way that you can release that stuff on command, right? Just by using certain self-hypnotic meditation tools. And I teach people how to do that. It doesn't take a 150 IQ and, you know, 35 years sitting on a mountain going, oh, I'm telling you what now, I'm going to be meditating, right? It doesn't take that. You know, you don't have to be a samurai warrior studying for 40 hours, you know, a day for, you know, 29 years to get that stuff down. It's a skill set that anybody can learn. And if you practice it enough, if you do that nasty four-letter word work, oh, my God, he said it again. Yeah, I know. It's no work. There's no around it, way around it, guys. You just got to, you know, belly up to the work bar and put your boots on and get going. So once you practice this, your body begins to learn that when you get into certain mind states, when you say certain words to yourself, certain phrases, certain images. That's why the people do the om or whatever it is they're going to do. I mean, I made a joke about it. But seriously, you do some word that becomes this cue, this mantra, right? This signal to your body, it's time to relax. And if you practice that enough, it becomes habitual, just like playing guitar. You learn motor skills and your brain goes to it automatically. So your brain goes, oh, it's time for me to relax. And within about 30 or 40 seconds, you're there. Right? And that's about the time it takes a Xanax pill to calm your butt down if you have an anxiety panic attack, right? And that's why I teach people these skills during panic attacks, because you can calm your body down. It's the same stuff, right? The so-called autogenics, the self-hypnosis, the meditation training. Well, you get high doing that stuff. You can do it to a certain way that you can get high. You don't need that shit, right? And honestly, that's one of the reasons I don't do drugs, because I know how to do that. I learned to do that really, really early when I was a kid in a shootload of pain with my chronic illnesses I had until I was about 20 years old. And I was in pain a lot, and I learned to dissociate by accident. And I also learned that I kind of got high and felt this woohoo feeling during and after, right? It lasts a lot longer than drugs, and it doesn't cost you a freaking thing, except the lessons to learn how to do it, I guess. But, you know, once you do it, it's relaxing to your body. It's great for your blood pressure. It's great for your muscle tension. You live longer, happier, prospering more, you know, like the Vulcan Dilly, right? It's way cool, and it doesn't cost you any flipping money. So you have all this money left over, right, to buy cars, you know, big houses, and in my case, more babies. or whatever it is you want to do. Put it in the bank for retirement, buy a house on the lake, buy a second car, whatever, right? And it's not illegal. You don't get into trouble. You're not going to jail to not pass go to not collect $200. You're not getting kicked out of schools and having to go to crappy-ass, you know, military schools. And I'm not slamming military schools because they're great if that's what you want to do. But, you know, traditionally in this country, you know, the bad boys and bad girls have been sent off to these military schools to square them up and straighten them out, you know. And for some folks, that's great. And if you're a military-type guy and gal and you want to learn tactics and be in the military, woohoo for you. That's awesome, right? But that's a real inconvenience for people who don't want to be there, right? And people who don't want to go to these so-called alternative schools and stuff. And again, I'm not slamming them. They serve a great purpose. But you can save yourself a lot of pain in the butt. You can save your parents a boatload of money, right? I can give you a lot easier ways to piss your parents off if that's your goal, right, to get them to spend money sending you off to these schleppy boarding schools or whatever. You know, there's easier ways to piss your parents off that aren't going to cost them money that won't, you know, bite you in the butt as a secondary side effect. Because remember, guys and gals, if you're a teenager and you're under somebody else's care, you know, like you're under 21 or under 18 or whatever, and you cause problems with the person up ahead of you, you're going to catch the stuff that rolls down, which is ergo the military axiom, and you guys have heard me say this before, shit rolls downhill. That's what it means, okay? Or these people that say, oh, well, I don't really have that big of a problem because I have a problem because I'm here. If I could move to Miami, if I could move to Seattle, if I could move to Oshkosh, Wisconsin, you know, I won't have a problem. In my business, that's called the geographic cure. That's also horse manure. These people are using escape avoidance. That's what it is, okay? And no, they're going to find trouble wherever they go. And that's why the famous quote, wherever you go, there you are. You can't run from yourself. And you can't fix yourself from the outside in. You have to fix yourself from the inside out. That's why drugs don't work. They just don't work. And I'm talking about drugs that you're using that you don't need because your body's missing something, okay? The non-prescription drugs and using the drugs incorrectly, even if you are on prescription drugs. And most of you know, my bent is towards holistic alternative stuff as opposed to strictly Western medicine stuff. But, you know, whatever works for you guys, works for you guys. If you really have a medical or psychological issue because you have a biochemical brain fart that you or a body fart or whatever, that you have to have that stuff. That's a different story that people just use stuff in, you know, in excess because they want to get high or escape, avoid stuff. So you confront the person. You talk to them about the damage it's causing them. You talk to them about the damage it's causing their relationships, right? But you do it nicely. You do it firmly. But you don't scream and yell. You're calm. You stay as relaxed as you can. And you may have to have this discussion 400 or 500 times, right? People often don't hear it the first time. As I mentioned earlier, I'll see the eyes roll when I talk about some of the stuff with my patients. And I can, I'll say, you know, you can't be dating these kind of people because these kind of people are going to lead you to do X, Y, Z. And I know that because the last 5 people you've dated have been this kind of person. And you know, the person says, no, but this girl's different. This guy's different. You know, no, they're not. You're deluding yourself. Stop being a dumbass. Now, I won't say being a dumbass in front of them, although I have said that before. But again, I say it, please don't mishear what I'm going to say, but stop doing stupid behaviors. Right, I often won't call them. I'll say, stop acting like a dumbass because you're not a dumbass, right? I try not to label people. I label behaviors, right? You're doing stupid behaviors. You're doing self-defeating, hurtful behaviors. You're doing behaviors that aren't going to get you anywhere. And I recently had a former patient of mine call up and say, you know, when you told me not to do X, Y, Z, and
I said, yeah, and I know you didn't believe me at the time. He started laughing. He goes, yeah, you're right, I didn't. He said, I believe that you believed it, and I believe that technically it was right. I know, but you believe that some way you were going to get around it, and you were going to be a freak of nature, and you were going to be better than Mother Nature and not have to deal with the natural and logical consequences, right? And he goes, yep. He said, and I did the very thing you told me not to do, and let me tell you what happened, and you were absolutely right, and I just called to apologize. I almost fell out of my chair. And you know what? I respect the hell out of that. That took so much integrity. That took so much, you know, internal fortitude, cojones, balls, whatever you want to call it. That was like uber cool. And I thanked that person for that and said, thank you so much. That was awesome. And I've had parents call me. Yeah, it doesn't happen real often. I've had maybe five of these over the 20-something years I've been doing this where people will call me and go, yeah, remember me. You remember me? You told me this was going to happen, and I got mad at you, and it happened, and, you know, and I need to come back and see you. Or, hey, you know, it happened. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry I questioned you, and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, that was really cool. I have nothing but respect for those people. Nothing, right? Because we all make mistakes, and we're all anapodi. Oh, sorry, that's Greek to you, right? Ba-doom. And sorry, yeah, I know. My jokes are getting worse. I know. I can tell you that's Greek for hardhead, stupidly hardheaded. You know, I call it the James Dean syndrome. That's rebel without a cause, right? Or the Tom Petty, the rebel without a cause syndrome, right? But yeah, that's the story. So be honest with them, but be very calm as you can be. Point out how their behaviors are hurting them, what your concerns are, in very specific. Don't moralize. Don't lecturize. In other words, don't go, well, you know, God would not want you to. Most people aren't going to respond to that. Now, if you got somebody who's uber religious and that's part of their stuff, okay. But I tell people, stay away from morals, right? You cannot prove morals. You cannot. And do not put your morals on other people. I don't tell anybody what to do that isn't documented. In other words, I can document the drugs are bad, and I have tons of research that supports my stuff, you know, and I talk about conflicting research where there is conflicting research, and I tell people, you know what, this is your life. You need to do what you're going to do, but here's the reality. And if you don't want to believe it, sucks to be you, but here's the reality, okay? And I back up my stuff with data, and that's the bottom line. So don't moralize. I don't go, oh, you're disappointing God, because you know what? I'm not that smart. I haven't gotten off the hotline with God or Jesus or Buddha or Allah or whatever, and that person or persons or force hasn't gone, oh, yeah, you know, you need to tell this guy I don't really like him and I'm pissed off at, or I'm really angry at this chick, and, you know, she's now forfeited her salvation. No, that's ridiculous. And frankly, I would not worship a God that did that. I think that's absolute horse manure. Again, my own personal belief system. But I don't moralize people. I talk about facts and reality. I use statistics. I use data. I use real-time examples. And while most of you guys probably aren't nerd heads like I am, I'm sure you can think of 10 or 12 people in your immediate environment, family, friends, coworkers, enemies, acquaintances, TV personalities, rock stars, whatever, who've done similar stuff that the person you're concerned about has done. You can use them as examples. Right. One of the things I tell people is use other people's behaviors that are negative as examples of what not to do. It's the same thing I tell kids when they're in school with a teacher they don't like. Right. So, and I've been there myself. I go to teachers that I just think are like, oh my God, would you please shut up? You're driving me nuts with this boring crap. Right. And it's like, you know, it's the, you know, the Bueller, anybody, you know. Got to love Ben Stein's character in that movie. Anyway, you know, it's that or the guys and gals that think they know everything, or they start spouting stuff off and they have no data to support it. They just start spouting stuff that comes out of their mouth, right? And I'm just rolling my eyes thinking, oh my God, right? How much longer have I got in this class? And what I tell people is you always have something to learn from folks, even if it's what not to do and how not to be, right? So don't start yelling and screaming. Don't start lecturing and, well, young man, and finger pointing. I mean, that gets you nowhere, right? Except, you know, rolling eyes and people shut you off and go, la, 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 in their head, you know, and it just sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook, right? Don't go preaching. You're not God. You don't have the right, in my personal opinion, and you don't have the facts. Those are your beliefs. And if your beliefs are that and they work for you, great. I have no problem with that. Don't force your beliefs on other people. That's the problem that most people have with belief systems. They try to make other people believe them. And by doing that, they cross inappropriate boundaries. Even if they're doing it for somebody else's good, you know, it's not kosher. So stick with the facts. No moralizing, no lecturing, no parentifying, right? If you want to be the parent, be the caring parent. Don't be the disciplinarian bad parent, the critical parent in transactional analysis terms, right? Be the loving parent, You know, and parents who love tell their kids the truth. They don't enable. They don't allow their kids to do these parents that buy their kids drugs and are like, oh, I don't want my kid out in the street. I you know, my kid's going to go stealing and I'm just going to pay for his drug. Bad flipping idea. I know you meant the best and I know you had the greatest intentions, but it's wrong. You are enabling your kid's drug use. Well, what happens if my kid goes out there? Natural and logical consequences. How old is your kid? 25 years old? Are you kidding me? If your kid's under 18, you get them help, and if they won't get help, you force them to get help because that's your job. That's the natural and logical consequence of their misbehavior. You're not punishing them. You are doing your J-O-B as a parent. Okay? If they're an adult, you should have done your J-O-B as a parent. They should have known natural and logical consequences, and you warn them once, maybe twice, and you know what? What happens if a bus hit? I mean, God forbid, but what happens if a bus hits your butt tomorrow and you're dead? Who's going to protect your kid then? You're enabling your kid. You're infantilizing your kid. You're not helping your kid. Stop buying your kid drugs. Stop driving your kid to your drug dealer's place to buy the drug. Stop paying for your kid's cigarettes. Bad flipping idea. And if you're, and you've heard me say, you guys have heard me say this before, set appropriate role models. If you're a cigarette smoker, stop bitching about your kid being a drug addict because you're a bigger drug addict. And no offense, that's reality. Cigarettes kill a lot more people than coke or pot or alcohol combined, 3 times to be exact. Okay, so parents who are cigarette, adults who are cigarette smokers are bigger addicts than their kids. You cannot lecture. You can say, you know, don't use my example as a bad example because I'm an addict. And I got respect for that, right? And then if you're really smart, you're going to come in and get help for your kid because you're going to role model that when adults have problems, they get help. Oh my God, imagine that. My parents went and saw this addictions therapy person or went and saw this life coach that did cigarette cessation, smoking cessation or weight loss or whatever. Role model the behavior you want your kid to do. That's the other way you help people. Role model the things you want them to do, right? I don't tell, it's why I tell parents, I can't tell the kids and adults I see cut your hair and get a real job. I lost that right when I grew my hair long. Same reason I can't tell them to take that blue shit out of their hair or take those nose rings out. It's the same phenomenon. I can tell them what's going to happen if they go to get a job at Abercrombie & Fitch, right? And that's reality. I'm not moralizing it. And then, you know, it's your decision. How badly do you want the money? What do you want? What's your goal? And how badly do you want it? And how important is it to you to hold on to your belief system that you should have blue hair, right? Have blue, wash it out and put blue hair dye after you get off work, right? There's ways around stuff without compromising your values. I never ask people to compromise values because I don't compromise mine. Bad idea. Right? Or Shakespeare would say, you know, to thine own self be true. And he was right. You know, didn't it just piss you off sometimes how smart those guys were? It's like, holy shit. You know, you didn't have the internet. You didn't have a library. You didn't have, you know, ROM searches, you know, CD-ROM searches. You know, you look at like people like Hippocrates and Plato and Kant and Hegel and Aristotle and Newton and Galileo and, you know, Da Vinci and you know, Shakespeare and Milton and, you know, he's just like, that's disgusting. You guys are too flippin' smart, you know. Anyway, so... Be very measured, be very careful, do it out of love. And if you're a parent and you're trying to get help for your kid and you know they're not doing it and you feel like your kid's endangering his or her life, you know, do the right thing. Get them the help they need regardless, right? Consult somebody if you don't know how to approach them, right? I do a lot of consultation with parents on how to approach their kids. I do a lot of consultation with husbands and wives how to approach their partners or boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever, right? A lot of that, you know, the same principle applies at work with coworkers, right? You've got to approach it right. Timing's important, delivery's important, saying it with love, stating it in very behavioral, operational terms, no judgment in terms of no moralizing and no parentifying, right? And do it in a time when you've got a lot of time and you may have to say it time and time and time and time again. They may not get it the first 200 or 300 times you do it. And role model the behavior you want to be role modeled back to you. Don't have one standard for yourself, another standard for a kid. I hear a lot of adults say, well, I'm an adult, I can do that. Well, you know what? If drugs are a bad idea for a kid, they're a bad idea for an adult too. Imagine that. Oh my God, say it's not true, okay? Okay, so that's my spiel. So if you want to help people that say they don't want help or that are difficult helpers, you have to approach them right, and that's the bottom line. And you know, it really depends on how important it is to you, how many shots at this you're going to do. Because at some point, remember that if you're unsuccessful in convincing or trying to help somebody to get help, recognize that it ain't your problem. if you've done your job as a friend, as a parent, whatever, and your kid or your friend or your spouse or partner or whatever, you know, is just going to be an anapovo, going to be a stupid hardhead type, right? You do what you can do, and then whatever happens, you ain't responsible. Remember, we are all responsible for our own behaviors. We are all responsible for our own thoughts and our own emotions. Do not take responsibility for somebody else's stuff. You'll have a hard enough time taking responsibility for your own stuff. Trust me on this one. It's the biggest struggle I have, bar none, besides wanting to kill stupid drivers, but that's another story. But seriously, I really take your power back. It's not your fault if somebody else screws up. Don't carry the burden, right? Do what you can do. Get them the help if you think they're in a situation. But get consultation on how to get help if you don't know. From your pastor, from your counselor, I don't care. Your parents, you know, a life coach, I don't care. But find somebody and get some help on how to talk to your kids. If you're not good at conflict management or communication skills, take a class. Go see somebody and ask them how to do it. Do some role modeling and role playing before you get there. Don't wait too long. Catch it as early as possible. Ignoring the problem 9 times out of 10 ain't going to make it go away. And if you get help, go get competent help. There's too many, excuse my French, clusterfucks and half-asses out there. Get help from somebody who knows their stuff, who has a track record. Okay? Okay, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll be back again with another podcast on... Once you find somebody and you really do want help, how do you become a cooperative patient, client, life coach, client, whatever? And that's our next dilly. If any of you folks out there have any topics you want to see podcasted, let me know. That's how I got some of these topics up, okay? So I'll be interjecting more music trivia stuff because I think one of the people said they thought that they would like to hear me talk about that because they don't know a lot of rock trivia history. And I'm full of that stuff along with a bunch of other things, but we won't talk about that. All right. Thank you very much. And I'll check you guys and gals next time. Live well and always take your power back, own it, claim it, and don't give it away to anybody else. Thank you.